Big Rex. The mighty tyrannosaurs arose late in dinosaur history. Dinosaurs ruled the Earth for 120 million years, but there were tyrannosaurs for only the last 15 million years of that period. The land cruisers had stopped at the rise of a hill. They overlooked a forested area sloping down to the edge of the lagoon. The sun was falling to the west, sinking into a misty horizon. The whole landscape of Jurassic Park was bathed in soft light, with lengthening shadows. The surface of the lagoon rippled in pink crescents. Farther south, they saw the graceful necks of the apatosaurs standing at the water's edge, their bodies mirrored in the moving surface. It was quiet, except for the soft drone of cicadas. As they stared out at that landscape, it was possible to believe that they had really been transported millions of years back in time to a vanished world. "It works, doesn't it?" they heard Ed Regis say over the intercom. "I like to come here sometimes in the evening and just sit." Grant was unimpressed. "Where is T-Rex?" "Good question. You often see the little one down in the lagoon. The lagoon's stocked, so we have fish in there. The little one has learned to catch the fish. Interesting how he does it. He doesn't use his hands, but he ducks his whole head under the water like a bird."
"The little one?"
"The little T-Rex. He's a juvenile, 2 years old, and about a third grown now, stands 8 feet high, weighs a ton and a half. The other one's a full-grown tyrannosaur, but I don't see him at the moment."
"Maybe he's down hunting the apatosaurs," Grant said. Regis laughed, his voice tinny over the radio.
"He would if he could, believe me. Sometimes he stands by the lagoon and stares at those animals and wiggles those little forearms of his in frustration. But the T-Rex territory is completely enclosed with trenches and fences. They're disguised from view, but believe me, he can't go anywhere."
"Then where is he?"
"Hiding," Regis said. "He's a little shy."
"Shy?" Malcolm said. "Tyrannosaurus Rex is shy?"
"Well, he conceals himself as a general rule. You almost never see him out in the open, especially in daylight."
"Why is that?"
"We think it's because he has sensitive skin and sunburns easily."
Malcolm began to laugh. Grant sighed. "You're destroying a lot of illusions."
"I don't think you'll be disappointed," Regis said. "Just wait." They heard a soft bleating sound. In the center of a field, a small cage rose up into view, lifted on hydraulics from underground. The cage bars slid down, and the goat remained tethered in the center of the field, bleating plaintively.
"Any minute now," Regis said again.
They stared out the window.
"Look at them," Hammond said, watching the control room monitor. "Leaning out of the window so eager. They can't wait to see it. They have come for the danger."
"That's what I'm afraid of," Muldoon said.
He twirled the keys on his finger and watched the land cruisers tensely. This was the first time that visitors had toured Jurassic Park, and Muldoon shared Arnold's apprehension. Robert Muldoon was a big man, 50 years old, with a steel-gray mustache and deep blue eyes. Raised in Kenya, he had spent most of his life as a guide for African big game hunters, as had his father before him. But since 1980, he had worked principally for conservation groups and zoo designers as a wildlife consultant. He had become well known. An article in the London Sunday Times had said, "What Robert Trent Jones is to golf courses, Robert Muldoon is to zoos, a designer of unsurpassed knowledge and skill." In 1986, he had done some work for a San Francisco company that was building a private wildlife park on an island in North America. Muldoon had laid out the boundaries for different animals, defining space and habitat requirements for lions, elephants, zebras, and hippos, identifying which animals could be kept together and which had to be separated. At the time, it had been a fairly routine job. He had been more interested in an Indian park called Tiger World in southern Kashmir. Then, a year ago, he was offered a job as game warden of Jurassic Park. It coincided with a desire to leave Africa. The salary was excellent. Muldoon had taken it on for a year. He was astonished to discover the park was really a collection of genetically engineered prehistoric animals. It was, of course, interesting work, But during his years in Africa, Muldoon had developed an unblinking view of animals, an unromantic view, that frequently set him at odds with the Jurassic Park management in California, particularly the little martinet standing beside him in the control room. In Muldoon's opinion, cloning dinosaurs in a laboratory was one thing, maintaining them in the wild was quite another.